everyone, and welcome to Futures in Languages, a podcast showcasing stories from UCF's Modern Languages and Literatures Department alumni. I'm your host, Christina Torres, and today we have a special guest, Dr. Maria Cristina Santanas-Rogers, who is here to talk about her experiences working with students and alumni for our department. She is faculty here at UCF in our department. She is the coordinator and associate professor of Latin American, Caribbean, and Latinx studies. She is a UCF fellow in the Center for Global Economic and Environmental Opportunity, a UCF partner in the Puerto Rico Research Hub, and a UCF fellow in the Center for the Study of Human Trafficking and Modern Slavery. We're so glad that you could come and join us on our podcast today, MC.
Thank you for having me, Christina. I'm really excited.
I'm so excited. And I remember when we first met the first semester that I was teaching undergraduate sociolinguistics, and I had a section in that class on gender studies. And I thought to myself, you know, I really want to bring in someone who is expert in this area. I wanted it to be covered well. And we had never met before. So when I sat there and I listened to your lecture for the first time, I was just blown away. Like, I was like, wow, like, she is so engaging. My students are so engaged. I'm engaged. I'm learning. They're learning. It was such a beautiful experience. And since then, we've gotten to interact a bit in passing in the department. And anytime I do, it's always a pleasure. We have, in general, I mean, a lot that we could cover in here, and I know that we probably won't get a chance to cover all of the things that we could talk about because your areas of study and work are so vast. But I wonder if we could just start us off for folks who have never met you before, or folks who would be curious to start off general. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe where you're from?
Well, I am a Cuban Rican. I was born in Cuba and raised in Puerto Rico. I have been at UCF for more than a decade. I'm just not going to say the date.
Totally fine.
And I have worked in several different units at UCF. I started in communication. My degrees are in journalism and mass communication. And from there, I went to digital media. And from digital media, I went to modern languages and literatures. I directed the Women and Gender Studies program for 13 years. And now I am coordinating the Latin American, Caribbean, and Latinx program in the Modern Languages and Literatures Department. Mm-hmm. I love my students. I really enjoy this career. And it has been a pleasure to be working at UCF all these years.
We're really happy that you could join us working more closely in our department when you joined us. And I remember the introduction in our first faculty department meetings, like, oh, MC is joining us. I'm like, oh, great, who's this? And then I came to meet you and I was like, yes, this is awesome. How did you come to learn about UCF?
Well, when I finished my PhD, I finished in Temple University in Philadelphia, and the market was really difficult. So there was nothing. And we have had 5 ice storms in a row. And I really wanted to get out of the cold weather. So I wrote a letter to all the Florida universities about myself. And UCF answered. UCF wanted to interview me the next 2 days. I came down. They wine and dined me in Park Avenue, you know, the best places in Winter Park.
Fancy.
And then I went home and I thought about it because UF and Florida International wanted to hire me, but they wanted me to wait a semester because it was January. And UCF said, no, we don't want to wait. We want to have you now. So that's how I end up. I've never been to Orlando, never been to Disney. It was totally new to me. So yeah, that was destiny. One letter.
Yeah, the universe wanted you to be here with our students at UCF. And you mentioned that you joined us in the Women and Gender Studies program. Could you share with our listeners a little bit about what that experience of joining that was like?
It was a very fruitful experience. When I first came to the program, they had a couple of required courses and an array of electives with other units, but they didn't have a growth, internal growth that we needed. So we added lines of teachers and we created 13 new classes in 13 years. And it grew tremendously to the point that it is today very strong. Interdisciplinary by nature. Quite satisfying to see different points of view from the students and the fields that they study. And at the same time, for me, gender is like water, it's everywhere. So it was a very rewarding experience directing that program.
13 classes in 13 years. What are some of the class titles that stand out to you from that experience?
The ones I used to teach are First and Second Wave of Feminism, Women, Race, and Struggle, community activism, feminist theory, or women's research. I created a graduate course that was very popular. It's called Global Woman in Crisis. And also in undergrad, transnational and global feminism.
Yeah, I noticed feminism in more than one of those course titles. For our listeners, how would you define feminism?
Feminism is the area of empowerment and equality for women across the board. It's emphasizing an organic kind of learning where we concentrate on the disadvantages that women have faced across history and across cultures and platforms. And we create awareness through data and information on policy existing today and comparing it to the past.
Is there anything that has surprised you? Like, I'm sure many things have, but is there anything that stands out as a surprise to you as someone who has studied feminism and gender issues for as long as you have?
I think some people always say, well, you're in college, you have a higher degree, you can own property, you can vote. What's the big deal? Women have done everything. And I said, no, because we don't make the same amount of money in this country. And we need protection against violence. And we need protection against people that want to abuse us just for the sake of our gender. And it's very sad when you encounter, for example, I encounter male students defending women and some women not defending themselves on issues. So I think it's a fact that people are misinformed sometimes, and they think because we're a powerful and advanced and progressive nation that everything has been obtained. And I say to my students, in 10 years, once you're a mother, if you're a mother, come and see me, because the game changes. And in our culture, some things are accepted and not necessarily fair for a woman to follow. But at this time, you know, they are empowered by their education. They're empowered by deciding on a major. So they're not exactly sure what the workforce is going to bring to them.
Yeah, I can imagine, because you have a daughter, how many things have come up in these last however many years. Now, we just found out right before this recording that I met your daughter when she was in kindergarten a long, long time ago when I was helping out at her elementary school. But I'd imagine that as a mother of a daughter, all of these issues feel very important, pressing, not just from your own lens, but from the lens of motherhood.
True. I mean, she has been an activist with me from the stroller. She will go with me everywhere, and she understands some of the processes. And also, I enjoy listening to her and people her age. She's 23, and see what's important to her and how is she interpreting policymaking or government decisions or even international outcries for women and not against women but for women. It's a great education for me as well as for her.
Mm-hmm. What are some things that you've noticed in her generation that have stood out as you watch her approach these topics?
When I turned 40, which was, of course, yesterday, I had a little switch that was, if I don't like it, I'm not going to do it. It was a perfect switch. And I think her generation has that switch built in. She's very energetic about her decisions. She's assertive and she doesn't apologize. She doesn't think that she needs to apologize when she doesn't like something or she doesn't want to do something. And in the bigger thing, realm of things, I also I'm fascinated by the workforce, how her generation sees the workforce and the 9-to-5 schedule, the fact that they'd rather be at home working than being in an office, the fact that they put happiness as a priority in their lives. I think it's number one in their lives, in at least in the generation that I'm teaching right now, that it's her generation. I don't think I had that even listed in in my choice of priorities growing up. Happiness was really a wonderful option, but never a priority. And she sees it as a priority today, not like later when she's retired, but today as she joins law school and starts her future as a lawyer. I think that's very interesting.
I've noticed a shift also because I teach undergrad, and grad and the undergrad groups, I have seen a shift in recent years, as you're talking about. And not that folks before were like unkind necessarily, but I've just noticed this awareness of emotional intelligence and advocacy for the self and this idea of self-care and work-life balance and all of these themes that you're talking about. I've noticed them in my students, and I've appreciated them for myself also. This concept of work-life balance took a second for me to appreciate, and now I am on the other side of, let's say, wanting to make sure that that's something that happens. But yeah, students, I think, are taking this approach that, you know, in my case, I think I can learn from, and we can learn from each other in that process too.
Indeed, I think it's important to hear the new generation and to understand where they're coming from, besides just rejecting and saying, no, no, you don't know anything, you're young. It's very different, and every generation has a different flair. My generation was greed, you know, more and more money, how much money you make. Everything was money, money, money. And I remember that that was the measurement of success, and that is not a measurement of success today.
Yeah. So shifting gears a little bit here, I know that you work with several different groups on campus from your introduction, and we've talked a little bit about your experiences in the women and gender studies. You're also the coordinator and associate professor of Latin American, Caribbean, and Latinx studies. What are some things that you'd like our listeners to know about your program and the classes that it offers?
Well, thank you. Latin American, Caribbean, and Latinx, it's very important to me because it brings in everything that I am. As a Caribbean-born woman and a study and a researcher in Latin America, I find that having a program that touches four different areas is very important, because I believe that the time the students are with us is limited. And this is their time to learn as much as they can. So our program, besides covering some of the courses like topics in Latin America, issues in leadership or popular culture in Latin America, it feeds from history courses, it feeds from anthropology courses, communication courses, literature courses that are already in existence, that are dealing with either Latin American or Latinx or Caribbean studies. So by having our program, you basically are studying in those four different areas and learning as well policy and current situation in Latin America. It really equips you to work with the Latino or Latinx community in the States by understanding back in their original country as well as the situation here in this country. So it's perfect, because no matter where you go, you are going to find that kind of population in the United States. So it really equips you across the board in whatever discipline you decide, banking, marketing, government, even working for the police department can help you having this degree.
One of the themes that has come through on the podcast with the folks that are coming back to talk about their career experiences after having studied is that the degrees that we offer and the minors that we offer in our department were really helpful layer that were the extra step that would allow them to have more opportunities when it came to their fields, whether that's law or communication or journalism or marketing. The degrees in our department opened more doors, let's say. Have you heard from students who have come through that program about some of the things that they've been up to since graduation, out of curiosity?
Yes, our students and graduates are very successful because we have really encouraged their analytical skills. So no matter where they are, they can analyze, they can write very well, and they can express themselves in a more common ground experience. Let's say they were from Colombia, and of course, they come with already some knowledge about their own culture. But taking this course, these courses, allows them to then situate themselves as a Colombian within the bigger Latin American culture and to embrace other people of similar backgrounds, not identical, because Latin America is not a monolith. But it is important to create those common ground denominators. And in this case, our students find that they can really associate, they can write copy, they can create events of a larger Latino community with ease, and that people feel very comfortable because they understand a lot of the nonverbal communication or etiquette or perhaps communication skills with the larger community here in Orlando.
Mm-hmm. I hear you talking about opportunities to be more well-rounded and for cross-cultural communication, even if it's within a culture that is, you know, they are a part of, but as you've mentioned, is not a monolith, and there are variations within the community. And so to broaden that communication skill has opened opportunities in that space for them. Did I hear you correctly?
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. They are amazed because people kind of ask them questions, and once they apply and they see them, they feel, oh, wow, you can do this, you can do that. You basically can do anything because you really can understand the audience. And that's already 80% of the situation when you need to either support a program or encourage a product. You need to understand your audience. And they come with that because of the variety of courses that they are learning. They're learning from antiquity. They're learning from current events. They're learning from politics. And that prepares them then to have that as a back burner. So when they are communicating or creating experiences or events or planning activities, they can then proceed feeling and knowing that their steps are firm. Mm-hmm. And it's not just any guessing, you know, that we're going to do this now.
Mm-hmm. What are some fields that your former students have gone into out of curiosity?
Well, first of all, they go into graduate school because it's a wonderful thing to continue to do your master's and perhaps your PhD. And you can work in definitely in nonprofits as they finish their degree. They can work in government offices. They can work in public relations. They can work in information officer with banks, marketing firms. They can work with TV stations. They can work with advertisers and into different policies for nonprofits. And they are even lobbyists in government dealing with different populations. And because we're so close to so many parts of Latin America here in the United States, and we have a large amount of migrants that have come from the United States and have built their families here, they continue to feed back to their country. There's that link that we have as of second and third generation that doesn't go away. So at any time, our students can also work in foreign countries because of the knowledge that they have learned here, if that's what they want.
So you heard it from MC Santana Rogers. If you are interested in any of those opportunities that she's just listed, then the Latin American, Caribbean, and Latinx Studies program is something that you could look into yourself. I know that you also work for the Center of Global Economic and Environmental Opportunity. Could you share with our listeners a little bit about that center and what it does at UCF?
The center is a showcase of faculty talent, and we come from many different disciplines. We do research, we do presentations. I've always been very interested in violence against women, policy that exists, social media campaigns against them. And my work with them has been with human trafficking, as well as social media campaigns on fighting violence against women.
I imagine that that also might connect to your work with the Center of the Study of Human Trafficking and Modern Slavery.
That's correct. We teach human trafficking in many of the women's studies courses. And I also introduce that in topics of Latin America, in the class that I teach for the Latin American, Caribbean, and Latinx studies, because it's a very important topic. It's current, but unfortunately, it's a big business in the United States, around the world as well, to traffic human beings. So I think it's important to understand and to try to fight against it.
Do you have a favorite resource that our listeners might use as a launching point if they were curious to learn more about human trafficking as an introduction to the topic?
Well, you can go directly to the United Nations and go under UN Women and read on human trafficking, because there's many different types. Unfortunately, there's minors as well as organ traffic, as well as violence against women. And it is based on a desperation, either loneliness or need, where people are misunderstood and they're taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. So many people go in voluntarily thinking that their future is going to be brighter and that there are some opportunities for them to work and to make some money for their families, when it is a trap. And it is very difficult to get away from that trap.
Thank you for sharing that with our listeners. I know that it is a difficult topic, but it is an important one, just as you have said. So folks listening, you can check out that UN site and maybe begin some study on this important topic. I also know from your list of things that you're doing at UCF that you work with the Puerto Rico Research Hub. And could you share with our listeners anything about that work too?
Well, I grew up in Puerto Rico and I went to the University of Puerto Rico in Rio Piedras. So Puerto Rico is very important to me, and it's important to me for others to understand the very dynamic political situation in Puerto Rico and how fluid it is. And so when Dr. Fernando Rivera started this center, I said to him, you know, you can count on me because I serve as committee member for dissertations and thesis dealing with Puerto Rico or Puerto Ricans out of Puerto Rico. And in that way, I serve this center as a consultant on an efforts that are academic, because I think they're important to continue sponsoring research and to continue encouraging students to take on those topics.
Has the center existed since before Hurricane Maria?
Yes, it did.
Mm-hmm. I imagine that there was a shift in activity since that time period also.
Yes, the center has done particular research on post-Maria circumstances in the island in many ways. Trauma, for example, how people have been dealing with the trauma of losing it all, losing family members, and trying to rebuild their lives after Maria. Mm-hmm. And he's had several forums and events dealing with research. And Dr. Vergara, who is now a member of the sociology department, did her dissertation on trauma on that topic of Maria.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my family's experiences in Puerto Rico during Maria were definitely not the worst ones that I'd heard. But I just remember stories of my cousins being in line for hours and hours and hours to get gas for a generator. And they were in some relatively, again, strong houses. And but the amount of the loss of power and all of those stories. I remember students coming from Puerto Rico immediately afterwards in that year, the flood of students coming from the island to Orlando. And again, the stories that we heard of folks. So I would imagine it's a very impactful and also rewarding area to be studying in as someone who has that connection to the island too.
Yes, it is. And it is also difficult to understand the faulty infrastructure in the island and how, like you said, almost everybody was impacted regardless of buildings or quality of living, because of those services that were disrupted and that are still questionable. The electricity, the quality of the water, public transportation, roads and bridges. It has really made a significant impact in the island. And those people that live there and those that have loved ones there that are checking with. I remember working with some of the students that arrived to UCF and trying to help them and look, you know, situate them. Because it's a different culture and it's a different language for them. And also because they were worried about, you know, their homes, you know, back home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what a great way to give back to the community also while being here and interfacing. Thinking about students, and you mentioned students and working with students, what are some memorable experiences with students in classes, or maybe some mentorship experiences that stand out to you that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, as a teacher, you don't see things immediately. You kind of see them after a while. I've had students you know, mention my name and another student saying, oh, she saved my life, or she is the person, the reason why I went to law school, and or she told me that I should study this career and it has been so beneficial because I switched around and I'm so happy now. You just never know how many people you touch when you spend time with them, talking to them. And I've been very fortunate. My students have been very loving to me, very open and accepting on my advice or guidance. And as you know, the one-on-one mentoring is the best and most formidable because it's the one that you feel that you're being heard and that you can speak up. And in many situations, that has been the case for me. Although I was the faculty advisor for 14 years for the Gammas in campus, which is a minority sorority. And I love those ladies because they symbolize everything that I was, and I couldn't join because I didn't have those opportunities at the University of Puerto Rico, and they have it here. So I pampered them as much as I could for 13 years. And other organizations, we have child trafficking, and that was done with a student from the College of Ed, and I was their advisor for a while. And within our Women and Gender Studies, we have the Young Woman program that later turned into Science Leadership Mentoring Program, or SLAM. And SLAM continues today as a one-on-one with a UCF STEM major and a seventh grade girl from the area. And they work together for a year after school, once a week. And it empowers the girl to think, I can do science, I can do math. Mm-hmm. And why wait until they're in college? We thought, let's just get them in seventh grade because data tells us that after sixth grade, most girls feel less empowered. They question more their abilities. And they take the back row instead of the front row in the classroom. So we want to change that, at least with the ones that we work with. And it's a very successful program. Mm.
When you mentioned working with students for this section of our lives, I resonate with you when you say that because, well, we absolutely do see growth in our students during the time that they're in our classes. You often think of them and wonder like, hey, what happened after graduation? And we always hope that they stay in touch. And folks listening, I've always said my office is always open to present and former students alike. And I'm sure that it's the same with you, MC. But when you have the opportunity to run into students that you haven't seen in a while and hear what's been going on with them, that's just the best, isn't it? It's so nice to catch up with those students.
It's the best. Some of them have run for office and now carry a public office. And, you know, I'm extremely proud when I meet my students. I know of four of them that end up now in Washington, D.C. with great government jobs. And they're making policy. And they were sitting in my class one day and I told them, listen, I'm super dead. This is your life. This is your chance now. Mm-hmm. What would you do? You are going to be that manager that hires people. You are going to be that director. And they became those directors and those managers, which is, it's just flabbergasting. It's absolutely wonderful. Yeah. And they're doing very well.
Yeah. The best thing I think we can always do as an educator is exactly what you said, is to inspire the individual curiosity and to inspire the individual passion and to help folks to realize what they want to do and then to run with it as far and as fast as they can, you know? And yes, that's when the magic happens, right? We have a section of our podcast called Typically Ask Our Alumni, but today we're going to have Ask Our Faculty. We have a question from our correspondent, Miley. Are you ready for Miley's question?
Yes.
Okay, here we go.
What can mentorship look like for students interested in the modern languages and their literature?
Well, I honestly think that your professors are the first contact that you have with the department. And the second contact are your classmates. And in any opportunity that you have to be participants, not just for the current content of your class, but for any event or any activity, I know that I work with several community partnerships. So I'm doing those things and the students are really welcome to join us. But I think you should come to office hours. because the office hours are your time with your teacher. Nobody knows that you're there. And if you're not there, we just sit there doing emails. So save us and come and talk to us, and we can give you ideas about careers. We can give you ideas about events that you can participate, extracurricular clubbing, but you need to come. So call us, make an appointment in Zoom, or come and see us. Office hours are for you.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you. You heard it from MC. That's the message that I'm trying to share with all of the students, because I think that sometimes students feel shy and they think, oh, I don't want to quote unquote bother them, or I feel anxious. I'm like, listen, you have paid for access to office hours. You have paid for access to all the things of the university. And the thing that I'm sure you've shared with your students, and I try as much as I can to share it with mine, is that label of student grants you access to a lot of different opportunities and a lot of open doors that once you are no longer a student, it's much harder to gain access to. So take advantage of the time while you have the label of student. Take advantage of the opportunities that are there, that are present, and the folks who are offering you help. You don't have to sit at home alone worrying about something over a class. If you can send us a message or visit us in office hours, virtual or in person. But MC said it, we're there answering our emails if you're not talking with us, and we enjoy talking with you. So visit.
Mm-hmm. That is so true. I love seeing my students. I mean, I have things to give them, candy. We chat. They feel so much better. And yes, please, you never, ever bother me. This is my job. I like to facilitate your learning. So when you come to office hours, it's for you. It's really for you. It's not for me. I'm bored. You need to help me.
Yeah. So come help your faculty. Come help your faculty by visiting us. Thank you. What advice would you offer someone who is maybe interested in studying Latin American, Caribbean, Latinx studies, or really any of the classes that you are teaching now? What advice would you offer them if they're curious about the subject but maybe haven't considered joining the program yet?
I think one of the things I can give them are names of some of our students, because talking to a peer has a lot of power. In the classes that are offered face-to-face, I really encourage them to come and visit and sit, and we don't mind at all. Now, the ones that are online, that's a little harder, but you can always talk to a student, and you can come to our information sessions once a semester and listen to experiential learning, how you can do internships for money, or you can do study abroads in Latin America, and that also gives them a different perspective than just talking to me.
What are some of those study abroad opportunities that exist that students have taken with your program?
Well, our summer one this year is to Peru, and it's on sustainable eating and food sources.
Oh, so cool.
And as you know, Peru is a capital of foodies in the sense that the ingredients that are quite domesticated are in the different, when put together in Peru. Peru is the original site for potatoes. So they are dozens and dozens of types of different potatoes in Peru, which have very distinct flavors to them. But besides that, more and more this generation, this very exciting generation, is taking on the cuisine, the indigenous traditions of the cuisine to modern times. So it's still using the cilantro and using the lima bean, as well as the potato, as major ingredients on sustainable markets and community gardens to prosper in no matter what economic condition you are. So they're going to learn some of these aspects in this study abroad, and they're going to visit Machu Picchu, which is very magical, ancient Inca ruin, as well as working in the valley with other communes and co-ops. From the weavers to gardens. So I think it's Professor Maria Redman is directing this effort in this summer. And there are still spaces available. So don't delay.
That sounds amazing. I want to join. Do they need additional faculty? I want to join. That sounds awesome. Yeah, sustainable gardening is something that I've recently, you know, become more interested in. It makes sense environmentally, and how cool that students are able to to learn from their experiences in Peru in the summer. So I know that we are coming to the close of our episode today. And as usual, it's such a pleasure to check in with you and chat with you and learn about the classes and the programs that you work with. Is there a final thought that you'd like to conclude your episode with?
I think I would like to encourage everyone to read and to try to understand better Latin America, because it is one world after all. And we are benefiting and sharing our lives with many people from Latin America. So the best way is to open our communication channels and our hearts to each other.
Thank you. You heard it from MC, everyone. Thank you for listening to this episode of Futures in Languages. I'd like to give a shout out to Davideo Guy for our intro and outro music downloaded from freesound.org. I'm your host, Christina Torres, and our featured guest today was Dr. MC Santana Rogers. Tune in next time to hear more stories from the Modern Languages and Literatures Department. For more information about Latin American, Caribbean, and Latinx studies and other programs in the Modern Languages Department, please visit our website at cah.ucf.edu/languages.